Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of A Podcast Named Tim. We are a father and son movie review podcast, available everywhere audio podcasts are. We have a YouTube channel where we do Mandalorian reviews, Power Ranger reviews, and some other things we're working on getting on there as well. So please go and subscribe there. Subscribe on the audio platform as well. And we have a Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Again, that's Podcast Named Tim. And a website, podcastnamedtim.com. Today, before we get into the holidays, we're going to go down a little, I don't want to say nostalgia lane, but we're going to go to the 90s. And we're going to be doing Jackie Brown, The Edge, and Jurassic Park as our three movies for the 90s. Tomorrow we'll go, or next week we'll go straight into the holidays. I am Zach. Dad, how are you today, good sir?
Fantastic.
Well, that's good. That's good. I'm excited to talk about these movies, but before we do that, as always, will we kick off just what else you've been watching this week?
Last night we started The Flight Attendant. Watched the three available videos. They did a three episode premiere on that. It's on HBO Max. Kaley Cuoco from Penny from The Big Bang Theory is playing a flight attendant who's woke up in bed with a body.
Oh,
and she appears to be a bit of an alcoholic. She has lots of nights where she does not remember things, so she's trying to piece together just what the heck happened.
Okay.
It's good so far. It got us going. It got us in really quick. Let's see what else. Well, our regular movies. I think that's about it. I've been my new hobby of playing exploding kittens. I found after listening to a podcast about it, and I've been playing that on my iPad. But then I went ahead and ordered the hard copy, the nice version 4 thing. Got that last night. Got that yesterday. Expansion pack coming today, and so we played it for the first time last night. I think there was a little skepticism when we first started. We were all a little tired too, but I think we all enjoyed it by the end when we started figuring it out. It's a little different than the video version, but not much. It's got a couple little changes in the rules, but it was cool. I like it.
We got a little board game night last night. Little Quacks of Quedlinburg, finally got to play with more people than just myself and the wife. So that was good. Was in last place. So that happens, but whatever. Had fun. Did some homemade pasta. So got my chef on. Just some homemade pasta though. And no homemade Italian meatballs and all that. Maybe next time we'll do it up big, but that was delectable. And I watched all the movies, watched some Christmas movies, of course. Christmas Chronicles a couple times, and some of the classics, which we'll discuss here soon, I'm sure. And what else? Watched Survivor Series, as I mentioned, which was fine, you know. And watched some wrestling documentaries and stuff. Watched, you know, a lot of Undertaker stuff, and that's pretty
a couple Undertaker things.
Yeah, yeah.
I watched the little documentary on WWE about the. When you first met The Undertaker. Mm-hmm. That was interesting. And then I watched on YouTube this morning, I watched the Hot Wing Challenge. Whatever,
yeah, Hot Ones. Called.
Hot Ones, yeah. I watched that with him. That was pretty good. That was entertaining. Had a couple of stories.
Those are all entertaining, and I love just the concept of that show.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I finished The Crown.
Oh, yeah? And your... Your expert opinion, sir.
Well, this was the fourth season, I think it was. I've liked it. I've liked all of them. This one was a little weaker than some of the other ones, but it was also a little, it didn't paint the royal family very, very well this season. They got into the Diana era. So they didn't just pick on Charles. They also showed Diana's side too, that she was not exactly not guilty of it, but I think she was like kind of pushed to it. Mm-hmm. But she was portrayed as being a little loose. But I knew that he was always in love with Parker Bowles. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know that he spent so much time with her during their marriage. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that was a continuing thing all the way through. He apparently went on trips with her and spent many days and nights with her. It was pretty, and it was known. And it was fun to watch that each of their, I guess would be their like secretaries, mm-hmm. helped them plan the deceptions and done so. I mean, of course, this is, you know, we can't tell exactly what happened, but I mean, they would like correct him. Like if he said, well, I'm going, you know, I want to do this on this day, they'd be like, no, no, that's your anniversary. You can't actually see Parker Bowles that weekend. You'll have to, I mean, they just like, it was just what you did. Just no big deal. It also went into the Thatcher era. So it got into, I grew up with Thatcher, and I knew more about the Thatcher and Reagan dynamic and how they got along than I did the actual queen and her. I didn't realize that they butted heads so much. And, I mean, two powerful people, two powerful women trying to, you know, do what they got to do. So it was interesting, but I don't think it was their best season.
Well, I have not recorded. I'll be recording it tonight. My review for Mando Chapter 13, The Jedi. What did you think?
Well, I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know Rosario Dawson was going to play Ahsoka. I had not. Somehow I had missed that. Mm-hmm. And she, I think she did good. I thought she did a fine job. I like the story. I liked seeing Michael Biehn, mm-hmm. Back in, he was, you know, a big martial arts guy back in my day. Mm-hmm. I liked his character when he was sitting listening and could tell what had happened. I was like, oh, I guess your side won, so it's all good. But yeah, it was a good show. It was a good story.
What did you think of the reveals?
Which ones?
Well, what did you think? We'll go through the big three. What did you think about the baby's backstory?
It was interesting. I'm hoping that this is not going to be a Yoda. I'm hoping this one's going to go the other way.
What did you think of the name?
What was the name again?
Grogu.
Gogru?
Grogu, yeah.
Grogu,
yeah. Yeah.
Grogu. Okay. I'm being told this by other people.
Yes. Grogu. Grogu.
Grogu.
Yep.
All right. You've been given the thumbs up from Alex. You have pronounced it correctly, apparently. I mean, I didn't really care one way or another. Okay. It sounded a little Dragon Ball X to me, but.
Yeah. What did you think of the name drop of, and I know you don't know who this is, but that's why I'm asking you, of one Grand Admiral Thrawn?
Yeah, I don't, I didn't, that went totally over my head.
Yeah, that's a big one. That's a big one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I am wearing my Star Wars shirt today.
I'll just say that Thrawn is like the, If you're like an expanded universe, can't, you know, fan,
right?
That's like the Holy Grail. If you were to get him on live action, because when they started the expanded universe back in the 90s, that's where they planted their flag. Like, they started with his three trilogy of books, they were awesome, and then everything grew from there. So that's cool. And he is an awesome, awesome villain. So, and this would have been, I don't know if they're going to redo his storyline, because it was kind of 5 years after Return of the Jedi. He was trying to rebuild the Empire. I mean, it's, he did some stuff with cloning Jedi, or there was some stuff about cloning Jedi involved. So I was like, all right, well, this is kind of, we're kind of lining up with some things. I mean, we're not going to be able to do it exactly, but there's some things.
No, that's cool. Well, speaking of Star Wars, I was saying I had my Star Wars shirt on today.
Yes.
Do a little memorial for David Prowse that we lost yesterday.
Yes.
The original man in the dark suit.
Yes.
Sucks. We lost Peter Mayhew last year, and now David Prowse. So it's like, it sucks. But, you know, may the Force be with him.
Absolutely. Well, let's go ahead and get into these movies. We're going to start with Jackie Brown. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick moment to pause and hear a word from our sponsor. Jackie Brown came out in 1997 and was released on, do you know when Jackie Brown was released?
Christmas time, wasn't it?
Christmas Day. Christmas Day, 1997.
Because I believe tagline was Santa's got a brand new bag.
Oh, I don't know. I'll have to go look at that. It is written and directed by Quentin Tarantino. It is the only Tarantino film that I'm aware of that was originally based off of other source material, so not an original story. Stars Pam Grier, Samuel Jackson, Robert Foster, Bridget Fonda, Michael Keaton, Robert De Niro, Michael Bowen, Chris Tucker. A little small part from Mr. Tiny Lister. So, yes. So a nice R rating, of course, 2-hour-and-34-minute runtime, a 7.5 on the IMDb score, an 87 on the tomato meter, so it is certified fresh, and an 85 from the audience score. It was nominated for one Oscar, did not win, and that was for Best Supporting Actor, and that was Robert Foster. And, of course, it tells the tale of a middle-aged woman who is a stewardess, and that basically she comes involved. She's running money for a gunrunner, and everyone's ready to cash out, and everyone's backstabbing everybody to try and get the money. I had never seen Jackie Brown, so I picked this because obviously Tarantino became a thing during the 90s and revolutionized film in the 90s with Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs, but mainly Pulp Fiction, I would say. But I want you to go first on this. What did you think? Because you've seen Jackie Brown a couple of times before. What did you think?
Well, this is my third viewing. And I remember seeing it originally after Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs, of course. And it's not that I didn't like it, but I didn't really care for it. It just was, all right, you know, whatever. And I don't really remember my other viewings. This viewing, I knew the plot, so I got to pay attention to other things. And I actually think it's a masterpiece.
Why do you think it's a masterpiece?
It's story and character driven. And he just, even in his other movies, his characters are always great, but there's so much other stuff going on that you pay attention to. This one is just plain out, just good, a good screenplay. I love all the characters. I don't know. I think it was, I know I used to think it was paced really bad, or just kind of slow and boring, but I didn't find it that way this time for some reason. I mean, there's a couple parts you maybe could say you'd clip out, but I don't know. I just really enjoyed it this time. It's still not my favorite Tarantino, but I mean, Samuel Jackson says it's his favorite.
I was about to say, yeah.
So and I think a lot of people think that. I think Tarantino he knew it when it came out. There's an old interview with him that kind of said, you won't appreciate this film until you've watched it a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a, oh my God, you're not going to leave the theater thinking it's wonderful. So, but I thought it was damn good.
It was good. This is my first viewing, as I said, so I'm still in first view mode. It is so much more subdued than the other Tarantino movies because it is not as over the top. And more just what you would expect from a heist movie, I guess. I do really like it. There are some really good characters. I thought that Pam Grier was great in it. I thought Samuel Jackson was fantastic in it, as always. Samuel Jackson and Tarantino is the best pairing of actor and director, because those two, Tarantino knows how to write for him, and Samuel Jackson knows how to act the words that he writes. It's just those two are perfect together. There was one really big disappointment in this movie, and that was Robert De Niro, my humble opinion. Because I was like, oh, Robert De Niro in a Tarantino movie, this is going to be great. And I just didn't care for his character. Him and Bridget Fonda, their dynamic, and whenever they were on screen, I just didn't really...
Bridget Fonda was in it?
Yeah, Bridget Fonda was Melanie.
I thought Bridget Fonda's feet were in it. I didn't know she was in it.
Yes, we got... I laughed because, you know, we were less than 1 minute into the movie and we had already gotten our Tarantino foot shot.
I would have agreed with you on this until I watched it again.
Okay.
I really liked De Niro in this time.
Okay.
Because it wasn't De Niro. He wasn't playing, because I've actually become to where I kind of realized De Niro just kind of plays De Niro, which I know a lot of people do.
That's fine.
It was completely different. I liked his awkwardness. I'd never seen him play an awkward character. Yes, even the guy from King of Comedy.
Oh, Rupert Pumpkin.
Yes, that was awkward, but in a different way.
Yeah.
I thought I liked how he played it, kind of subdued it. And he actually kind of grew as he went. I mean, he was trying to be just a calm guy out of prison, not wanting to, you know, just go with the flow, which he's probably had to do for the 4-year stint. But as we started getting bigger and bigger, I mean, he started, you know, getting a little irritated, a little upset.
Right.
You saw that he wasn't a nice guy, because he kind of thought he just was, you know, a decent guy at first, just doing what he had to do to get by. But mm-hmm. Of course, later you found out, no, he's a killer and does not care.
And I should say, as always, the Tarantino's musical selection was excellent. I know a lot of people, of course, talked about blaxploitation films because, one, Tarantino is an avid fan of those, and obviously Pam Grier's in the film. Would you say that in some respects, the brilliance of Tarantino is that he takes the blaxploitation formula in some respects, but gives it a broader appeal? Like, he takes elements of it and just kind of makes it more towards the general audience.
Yeah, but he might have had a little help, because the novel is not written that way, because the main character of the novel is not even black.
Yeah, I saw that.
So he may have had a little heads up on that. But yeah, I see what you're saying. It definitely had a little... Of course, the music definitely helped it in the scenes. That scene that you got in all exploitation films with the characters on the side with that walk and the background look, the graffitis or the brick walls or the plain walls. It had all that kind of stuff. So I see what you're saying. Yeah, because I never thought of this blaxploitation at all.
It's not. He just...
But it did have kind of the feel of a
70s
movie. So yeah, I see it.
Did you see... what Pam Grier said to him when she went in for her audition?
No.
So she walks into his office and she said there were all these posters of her from 20 years ago. And she asked him, did you put these up because I was coming over? And he said, no, I was actually going to take them down because you were coming over.
I doubt that he put them up for her. He's always been a fan. So
yeah. I love Samuel Jackson's performance in this. Wardell Roby was great. That one shot scene where you get, I mean, you know it's coming, but when he's telling Chris Tucker to get in the trunk.
Yeah.
And we get that shot of just the car driving around just behind the fence. That was just excellent. And I really, really enjoyed Robert Foster, Max Cherry, him and Jackie Brown's very... It's a love story, but it's not like in your face. And it's a very show, don't tell. Like, he goes to buy the tape that she likes for the music she likes. You know, they're... It is a very well-paced romance story in this film.
Yeah.
So that was one of the aspects I really enjoyed. But I
love Chris Tucker in it. Chris Tucker scene was great.
Chris Tucker's always great. People can say what they want.
Fifth Element.
He was great. He was the only good part of the Fifth Element.
All right. I guess he was the best thing in the Fifth Element. I wouldn't say he was good in the Fifth Element. But.
Rush Hour, Friday, these are all great movies. People sleep on Chris Tucker. Anyway. Yeah,
it was a good scene.
But yeah, and I saw that Samuel Jackson, it was his idea to do the goatee and the hair for Ordell, which I liked. I liked that look. It was very, I don't know, I liked it because it was different.
It was different. I think Alex was very distracted by the goatee. He kept questioning, why does he have that thing on?
Alex watched this with you.
Alex watched a lot of it with me, yes. Not
what
every
did he
bit
think of his somewhat viewing of Jackie Brown?
I didn't ask.
I'm sure he's not a fan of this. Because, remind me, where is he at in his Tarantino viewings?
We haven't. He's Kill Bill. That's all he's really done.
Okay.
I turned on Pulp Fiction once, and I could tell within the first 5 minutes it wasn't time for it yet.
The time had not come for him to...
No.
To, okay.
No, his awakening had not arrived.
Okay. I thought that... I think it was a little slow. I think it was not as well structured as some of his other films in some of the, like there was one scene where Melanie and Robert De Niro's character are talking earlier in the film, and then we cut to them later, and then they're acting like they hadn't seen each other in a while, and they're asking how long it had been since they had seen each other. And he's like, oh, 6 or 7 years. I'm like, you were just talking like earlier in the movie together. So just like stuff like that. I was just like, what? What did you think of the actual heist stuff, the plot and how they shot that and everything?
I mean, it was all right. It'd been done. It was kind of lame.
Right.
But I don't think it was supposed to be anything fantastic. It wasn't really what it was about.
Well, what was Jackie Brown about to you?
Well, you kind of hit it. I think it was kind of, I think you did kind of think it was like a love story. I think that was his, I think it was more about Max Cherry and Jackie Brown than anyone else. The way they, their little run-ins together. But I guess it was a heist movie, but I don't think he put a whole lot of detail into the heist. A lot of thought process, I guess you just saw in the book. I have no idea. I didn't read the book. But it was pretty amateur hour.
I did see some other people that were considered for the film, which you might appreciate for this. Where did that go? I just saw it a second ago. Buying time because I'm scrolling. Okay. Sylvester Stallone originally wanted to play the Robert De Niro character. And... John Travolta was originally the first choice to play Michael Keaton's role.
That'd have been all right.
Would have been great to get a little more Travolta and Tarantino. Obviously, that worked so well that they're parodying it now in Christmas commercials. However many years later. Christina Applegate was originally considered for the role that for Melanie that Bridget Fonda played.
Nah, I could have been all about that.
What did you think of the? I don't know. I need to see it another time. It is on the lower end of the Tarantino movies for me.
This one, which I haven't watched Hateful Eight again.
I have not. That's the only one I haven't seen.
Yeah, I haven't watched it again. I watched the first viewing, and it kind of went kind of with Jackie Brown for me. Jackie Brown definitely elevated itself above it this time. I need to watch Hateful Eight again. But don't watch Jackie Brown now. You got to wait.
Yep.
A few years.
Yeah.
And I think you'll have a different appreciation for it if you wait a while.
I think right now, and I'm not saying this, I know this is going to sound bad the way I'm saying it, but I think this is the third worst. He's only done 9, so it's not like, you know.
Well, I don't know which ones you're putting down there.
Well, my least favorite is Death Proof.
Which is ridiculous because we quote that movie constantly. We love Stuntman Mike. It's got some great scenes in it. So I don't understand why that's a problem with you.
My least favorite is Death Proof. My second least favorite is actually Inglourious Basterds. I think Inglourious Basterds is very overrated by a lot of people.
I only like Christopher Waltz in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the opening scene with Christopher Waltz. And after that, I'm kind of done.
Yeah, it's in the bottom for me. It's not as good as Death Proof.
And then I would say Jackie Brown, Once Upon a Time in America, or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, excuse me.
Well, we liked that.
We did. Look, we're getting to the good stuff now. I mean, that, and then I would say...
Well, then you need to watch Hateful Eight before you can complete this list. Yeah. I don't think this can be a fair list until you watch it all.
Okay. And that is the only one I have not seen at this point. So, and part of that's because isn't it like 3 hours long or something?
Yeah, I think there's a longer extended cut too. Samuel Jackson's in it.
Samuel Jackson and Kurt Russell, right?
Yep. And Don Johnson. I don't know. Lee Horsley.
I remember it had quite the cast.
Yep.
Tim Roth, of course. Michael Madsen. Okay. Yeah. Typical. Well, what was funny was I watched some interviews. I watched some, tried to find some things to get some from the Time interviews. And Tarantino said, what made me laugh is he talked about how he kept putting in all these 70s actors in his films. And they were like, are you considering it? It was on Conan. He was like, are you trying to, like, you know, bring these people's careers back? And he's like, no, I have a long Rolodex. You know, Hollywood has their normal people that they like to use. And I have a longer Rolodex. And it made me laugh because, like, you use the same people.
Right.
It might be a different Rolodex. It ain't a longer Rolodex. I think it is worth a viewing for sure. And I know there's more there that I would catch and probably appreciate, like you said, on the second and third viewing, but just in some respects, underwhelming.
Cool. Who made the gun video?
I would love that. I'm sure it was Tarantino.
I've never seen that one on TV to know where I could get my AK-47s.
When you absolutely, positively gotta kill every motherfucker in the room. Except
no substitute. He says that word more than in this movie than any other movie.
Well, he doesn't say that word more than someone says another word in our next film. which we'll get to, because I know the count. I looked it up. So our next movie, The Edge.
I know what you're talking about now.
Yes. Came out in 1997. R rating, 1 hour and 57 minute runtime. A 6.9 on IMDb. A 64 from the tomato meter. A 70 from the audience score. Directed by Lee Tamaroi, I guess. And written by David Mamet. Stars Sir Anthony Hopkins, Alec Baldwin, Ella McPherson, Harold Peruna, and Bart the Bear. It is the tale of a billionaire who goes out to the cabin for a trip to, I guess, for like a birthday, kind of want to get out in the wilderness. Him and a couple other gentlemen get crash land and are stuck in the Alaskan wilderness, and there's a big old Kodiak bear hunting them down. So it's a story of survival. This was your selection for the week, so I'll go ahead and say my thoughts first. I really enjoyed this film. I thought it was really good music. I thought Anthony Hopkins, his dynamic with Alec Baldwin and how they were having to both fight each other and survive was great. And there were some really great lines about, you know, only shame is what kills people out in the woods and et cetera. And just their dynamic was good. Alec Baldwin was a little hit or miss at times in this. And he says the word Charles, I believe, 87 times. So that was a bit much. I enjoyed this. I enjoyed this film. I thought it was really well done. What did you think of The Edge?
Yeah, I liked it. I think I really liked it when I first saw it as well. I just had really forgotten about it until I had watched or listened to a podcast of The Office Ladies. And apparently, Jenna Fischer, this is one of her go-to movies. And she reminded me of that I liked it. Now, we were doing the 90s, so why not? I this is one of the few things that I think I've really been able to stomach Alec Baldwin in.
Oh, the Boss Baby, of course.
Yeah, that's not the one. It was actually Beetlejuice, but not, he's not, it's the movie, not him. Mm-hmm. I mean, David Mamet can always put together a good movie. He's done some really good ones, but it was good. I like the dynamics. I like the way they just kind of laid back. And I mean, you thought immediately that there was probably something going on with Elle McPherson and Baldwin's character, but he still kind of left it up for a little while to maybe it is just a little flirt. Maybe he wouldn't be bold enough to mess around with this billionaire's woman. But yeah, I like the reveal. I like how he found the reveal.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool. And I liked how it reminded me of Deliverance a lot, where we had the character that you didn't think would be able to stepped up more than any of them, kind of handled his business because he was so well read that he pretty much knew everything in theory. it was good. The music was good. You're right. The music was good.
What did you think of Bart the Bear's performance?
Bart the Bear was, you know, Bart the Bear. He played his part right. It was his second movie he had done with Anthony Hopkins. Mm-hmm. They did Legends of the Fall, so I wondered if he actually remembered him.
I don't know.
But that was a big bear.
That was a big bear.
Big bear.
I like the reveal that you were talking about. I agree with Sir Anthony Hopkins. I don't think Alec Baldwin had it in him.
He was the weak point.
I think when he was talking about you wouldn't kill me, you wouldn't have done it. I don't think he had the stones to do it. I don't think he was going to pull the trigger.
No, I don't either.
But I did appreciate, I thought it was hilarious, and I don't know how they screwed this up, and it reminded me of another movie, but when they're doing the compass test for the first time, which I guess I don't know if this is actually real or whatever, but you take a needle, rub it on silk or something, and then put it on a leaf in the water, I guess.
Yep.
And it's supposed to point north. That is an actual thing?
It is, absolutely.
Okay. I'm not a Boy Scout, so I don't know. I like the fact that they completely screwed up and ended up right where they were at the originally. It made me think of another 90s movie. It made me think of The Blair Witch Project, because I was like, Man, if only they had. It made me think of the scene where they're talking about the map and when he kicked the map and it wasn't doing him any good. So that made me laugh. I did see that Sir Anthony Hopkins did have some actual health issues when trying to do this movie. I guess he was on some painkillers, and because of that, he wasn't registering his body properly, essentially. And so when he was in the water, he didn't realize he was getting hypothermia, how cold he was. So that was interesting. I want to run some of these names by you for that were considered for this film, and you can tell me if they would have done a better job or not. For Charles Morse, a.k.a. Sir Anthony Hopkins, they also considered Robert De Niro and Dustin Hoffman.
No.
Okay. For Robert Greene, this is Alec Baldwin's character, Ray Liotta.
Yes, yes. Yep.
Richard Greer.
Yep.
John Travolta.
Yep.
Who would you have preferred out of those three?
Out of those three, I'd Richard Gere.
That's what I was thinking, too.
Yeah, I think Richard Gere would have pulled that one off.
And if I had to pick one of the other people for the Charles Morse, I'd say Dustin Hoffman. I would have preferred Hoffman over De Niro for this.
Yeah.
Sir, and who would have been best? Someone else who turned down the role, actually. Sir Michael Caine.
Well, yes, Michael, and I can't believe you turned it down, because Michael Caine is not known for turning down very much. He's one of those actors that believes you take every role you can get, because
you
know when it's going to stop.
Maybe there was another paycheck that was bigger at the same time.
Yeah, I don't see De Niro in this one, though, for some reason. So what's the De Niro-David Mamet connection?
I don't know.
David Mamet wrote The Untouchables.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. He's written a lot. Hannibal, and I can't even think of all the stuff he's written. But he's written quite a bit.
Glengarry Glen Ross, Wag the Dog.
Yep.
State and Maine, House of Games. Yeah, a number of things. Yeah, I would say this is actually worth a viewing, which I was not expecting. Because when I saw it, and I saw the concept, I was like, this is going to be pretty average. And you could say that it's a tale as old as time, you know, getting out into the wilderness and finding who you truly are and all that. But I just thought these two did a great job.
Yeah, I liked it. I'd forgotten how well done it was. I think it's a forgotten one that people need to check out.
Yeah, I would imagine that this was It's weird because, like I said, it's one of those ones that people probably don't think of. Like, I would have never heard of this movie had we not been doing this podcast.
Right.
I was looking for its release. It went on to gross $43.3 million in its theatrical run. I don't see a budget here, but I would imagine the budget wasn't too bad.
Well, got to pay the Sir Anthony is.
Yeah.
Paycheck.
You got to pay him, and you got to pay the bear, man. Probably the insurance to have the bear.
Yeah.
That was probably the most expensive part. I would imagine.
Beautiful, beautifully shot too.
Oh yeah, excellent. I mean, the Alaskan wilderness. I don't know if that's where it was actually filmed, but it was beautiful. Beautiful. Faux show. Okay. Well, that's pretty much all I got to say about The Edge, sir, unless you got something.
No, it was, it's kind of a sleeper movie in the 90s that had so many big blockbusters. It probably got kind of put on the shelf, but I think needs to be brought back out. Give it a viewing.
Yeah, it is interesting how, like, the 90s were just, to me, I mean, there's just, like you said, so many blockbusters. I mean, it doesn't even crack. I don't even know. I don't think it cracks the top. I'm trying to look at some numbers here. There's a lot of movies that made a lot of money. Let's just put it that way. I mean, so many. I mean, even that year, if you go to 1997 alone, Titanic, The Lost World, Jurassic Park, Men in Black.
Against?
You said what?
What did it open against?
This movie?
Yeah.
Did it open
any of those? I hope not.
No. Let's see. 1997 film, September 26. Let me pull that up for you here. It opened up against, if this is correct, which I don't think it is, because it doesn't even have this movie up there. I don't know. It's kind of being weird, my site. Okay. So, all right, well, let's go to our last film. Speaking of Jurassic Park, it is Jurassic Park. Of course, the original... directed by one Steven Spielberg. Last I checked, that guy knows how to make some movies. of course, came out in 1993. Written both the screenplay and the novel by Michael Crichton. Is that how you say his name?
Crichton.
Stars Sam Neill, Laura Dern, Jeff Goldblum, Richard Attenborough, Bob Peck, P.D. Wong, Samuel Jackson has a role in it, Wayne Knight.
Newman.
Yeah. Thank you. PG-13 movie, 2 hour and 7 minute runtime, and 8.1 on IMDb. I got to pull up the whatever it's called, Rotten Tomatoes page, but so I'll get that in just a minute. But what did you think of... Yeah, as I'm sure you've watched it a million times at this point, especially given my nephew. What did you think of Jurassic Park?
You know, get your popcorn out. This is a popcorn movie. It's a big old blockbuster. It's not supposed to be. And I get tired of people saying, you know, blah, blah, it's a female, only a female mosquito can have the blood in it. And that's obviously a male mosquito, and that wouldn't work. And the DNA, you couldn't do that. Who cares? That's not what this movie is supposed to be. Nobody jumps on the fact that E.T., that that's not real, and Spielberg pulled it off. This is a good movie.
It's a great movie.
It is a great movie.
91 on the tomato meter. 91 from the audience. I had forgotten how I did not give this movie enough credit until this most recent watching. I mean, obviously, I loved it, but it is. First of all, the special effects hold up today, 1,000%. It is one of the best blockbuster style movies. And this is Mr. Blockbuster himself. I mean, this is Jaws and E.T. and it properly captured the awe. Of course, well, and I guess we should say John Williams' music, amazing as always. So when you have Steven Spielberg directing and John Williams doing the music, you can't really screw anything up, basically, at that point. They capture the awe of seeing dinosaurs for the first time, and they captured the terror and the action of that as well. So many great characters in this film. John Hammond's a great character. Sam, all of them. You have the Sam Neill who's trying to learn how to be a dad, and all of that. You have so many quotable lines. Just everything about this movie is excellent.
This is my favorite. Well, my second favorite Jeff Goldblum movie.
Okay,
I love him in this movie.
Oh, he's great in this movie.
His little lines and his little I really don't care attitude. He's just like, you know, it's so matter of fact. I like him in this.
What is your number one Jeff Goldblum movie?
The Fly.
Oh.
Performance wise, anyway.
Okay.
I love his performance in that and I love the performance in this.
What did you think? Something hit me last night as I was watching it, and I went and tried to dissect some things. I was like, you know, it's a movie that people have probably talked to about death, you know, the effects and the action and yada, yada, yada. Something stood out to me this most recent viewing that I don't know what our director is trying to say, but maybe we can get into. Because Steven Spielberg is not a dumb man. And he knows film, and he knows the tropes of film. John Hammond is in all white. So he's the good guy, right? And Ian Malcolm, is in all black, which would suggest that he's the bad guy. Do you think that Steven Spielberg, and I might be reaching here, that he saw Hammond, the person who was willing to do whatever it took to push boundaries to entertain the masses as the good guy, and the person who was questioning and critical the critics, is he trying to take some shots at some Hollywood people here? Because he knows what he's doing when you put someone in all white and when you put someone in all black.
Or maybe it was just a red herring and he was trying to make you feel that way so that you would question later whether or not just because you can't do something, should you do it?
Right.
I don't know. I never even noticed that, to be honest.
Yeah. He put him in all white and he put him in all black. So clearly, and they are the ones butting heads about, you know, should this be done? But is it like you said, is he doing it because he knows us as the audience, we're going to think, oh, this guy's in all white, he's the good guy, so what he's doing is correct?
I'm not sure. It'd be a good question for him.
That really popped into my head. I really, actually, and for the small part that Samuel Jackson has in this, he did great. Wayne Knight did great in this. He was an excellent scummy chicken shit heel.
He just played Newman again.
Yeah. He played like evil Newman. Evil. Like even more evil Newman.
You don't think the Newman in Seinfeld is evil?
He's like a caricature of Newman in this. All right. And actually, one of my favorite scenes is that scene where we get the thing with the, I don't know what the dinosaur was called, where it has the, it spits at him and it has the fan. That scene is excellent. Excellent, excellent, excellent.
I like how he wasn't afraid of them at all. I mean, he was leery, but he wasn't really afraid.
Well, he didn't know what it was.
It's a dinosaur. Who cares what it is?
Yeah, I agree with you there.
The kitchen scene, your grandmother, when I was talking to her about this, she saw it with me in the movies, and she said this is one of the only times, she can only think of maybe two times, that I've ever really jumped in a movie. And the kitchen scene was definitely one. When that thing jumped that counter, Now, what's creepy, and maybe just doesn't know well enough, your nephew and your daughter, neither one of them really jumped when that thing jumped up. So we've either desensitized them now to where, you know, there's no big deal. But the kitchen scene is absolutely fantastic. I love the scene, the famous scene of the water starting to.
Yeah.
The rock with those pounding noises. Absolutely love when the dinosaur eats the guy off the toilet. That's a great scene. I mean, in fact, they built a 12,000 pound T-Rex that had to be so monitored because it was so dangerous that, you know, it could have killed somebody on set with it, the way it operated. It's just, it's Spielberg at his best. It's a great movie. I don't even mind a couple of the sequels. They're not as good, no. Are they necessary? Maybe not, but they're still fun.
people need to stop shitting and looking down on the Lost World, because it is much better than people remember.
Now that's the second one?
That's the second one. After that, yeah, it's done. But the second one has some really cool scenes in it, and expands on some of the raptor stuff, because the raptors are the best part, in some respects, the best part of the movie, obviously. You can keep your T-Rex. Give me some velociraptors. I thought it was interesting. I think they said they had built some of the raptors. They wanted them to look a certain way and be a certain height. And people said, well, raptors aren't that tall. And during the filming of this, or right around the filming of this, they built something, and then they found dinosaurs that actually did represent what they were trying to create.
Right.
So I thought that was fascinating.
Feather.
Good.
They didn't have scales, they had feathers.
Yeah, they found some of that out in this movie doing the same thing. So some actual discoveries. And this is, to me, what's fascinating is you have movies like this in Indiana Jones and Star Trek, which are such cultural touchstones that they create industries. Like, there's paleontologists now because people saw Jurassic Park. There's archaeologists because people saw Indiana Jones. And people wouldn't know what...
I think it even got some imaginative DNA people going.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's just... It's one of those things where it's like, this movie is so amazing that people decided, I want to do... watching this movie has changed my life and decided what I want to do for my career. And scores of people, not even just like, oh, like one person. Like, right. The whole... They ain't going to be paleontologists without this movie. To the degree there is.
So should Harrison Ford have taken this the role that Sam Neill played?
No.
He agreed with you. I see later.
Yeah.
After he saw it, he said he was glad he did the right thing not taking it. It wasn't right.
Did you see who wanted to buy the rights to the film just a few hours later after they had already purchased it?
No.
So first of all, they purchased for $1.5 million, I believe. I think it was, or $2 million, something like that. They purchased the rights to this movie before the book was even finished and published. Someone else wanted to buy the rights to this movie to make it, and that was one James Cameron.
Whew, we dodged a bullet there.
He agrees with you. He said, it says right here, Cameron realized that after watching it, that he did a better job because he wanted it to be much more horror oriented, like Aliens.
Right.
And he said it wouldn't have been fair to kids, basically, like that. He wouldn't have been able to capture, you know, that magic for the kids like Steven Spielberg did. So yeah, we dodged a bullet there, for sure. But yeah, it just, a great, great movie. There's a fun little story here of David Knope, who helped write. I guess he worked on the writing as well. When the movie came out, he said he was in New York. He went to go to a theater, and a guy comes out and says, ladies and gentlemen, the 7 o'clock showing of Jurassic Park is sold out. And everyone's like, oh, and he says, the 10 o'clock showing is sold out. And was like, ah, he says, and Saturday night, 7 o'clock and 10 o'clock ones are sold out. And he's apparently, he looked at someone and said, I'm not an expert, but I think that's very good. and obviously this movie went on to make a lot of money.
It rained for a while, I think.
Yeah, it did pretty, pretty good. And is the only reason we're getting sequel after sequel after sequel.
Then we got a TV show out of it that we wouldn't have had.
That's right.
ER.
Yeah.
On to become a huge TV show was a Michael Crichton book. And he was getting ready to work on it and ended up getting this. So he put that on the shelf and ended up making it they made it a TV show later.
Which I did not know that ER was his thing. Because when I think of Michael, I think of like this and Westworld and stuff like that. But yeah, what an excellent. And honestly, the trivia page for Jurassic Park is longer than just about any trivia page. I mean, it's absurdly long. So if you all wanted
in it too,
you said what?
I like the kids in it too. I thought they did a good job.
Yeah, they did a good job. They were great, great characters. I cannot think of a flaw in the movie. It is a perfect film, unless I'm wrong.
Well, except for the DNA thing, that just took me totally out of the movie.
It's not believable.
Yeah. The Jurassic period's not even when the T-Rex was in. I was like,
oh, please. Oh yeah, I've seen that. It just sounds cool.
Yeah. People just always gotta try to. It's a movie. It's a movie, people. Why we have to look for? If it was a documentary, get on your horse and bitch and whine and cry and moan and all. But it's a movie. People.
I have one last thing to say before we talk about what we're going to be watching next week. Stop making these shitty sequels. The Jurassic World trilogy or whatever. I've only seen the first one, and that was enough. Garbage.
But
Chris Pratt was fine. Actually, Chris Pratt was fine in it. He was lovable and he was just being Chris Pratt, which is fine. The rest of the soulless movie that existed there was shite.
Well, now we've got a cartoon on Netflix.
That's fine. That's actually not bad. That's better than the movie.
It's fun. I've watched it with your daughter and your nephew probably about 10 times all the way through.
Oh my God.
Like, so, and no, for people that are listening, no, I do not do anything with the kids but watch TV. I don't believe in less screen time. I like to soak their brain full of TV. It worked for me. It worked for you. Why not?
How come Laura Dern didn't take the Jeep and just ram it directly into the dinosaur? Shouldn't that make it explode out of nowhere? If you were to just take it and just immediately charge at it, like really, really, really fast, like if you were to go light speed directly at this dinosaur, do you think that would have worked?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, that's not her field. Her field was digging in dinosaur poop.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead to our next week. I've already prepped you a little bit. We are it is the 50th anniversary of the Fat Man, his original film. Which, of course, is Santa Claus is Coming to Town. So we're going to be covering that. And so we're going to be doing only movies that feature the big man in the red suit. So we're going to be doing Christmas Chronicles 2, Santa Claus is Coming to Town, and what's your movie?
Well, you can call, thank the governor, because you got a reprieve at midnight last night. It was close to midnight. Until then, you are going to get to sit through and suffer through Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
Oh, I was actually hoping you were going to pick that.
I'm going to change that. Okay. You can watch that as a little bonus if you'd like, because I found a new movie.
Okay.
One that we've never seen. It is a 2020 movie. So we're probably going to run it.
That's fine.
I loved the title. and I kind of read a little bit about it. So we're going to be doing Fat Man.
I have seen the poster. That is all.
Mel Gibson.
Okay. Yes.
And Walton Goggins. And I don't know who the woman is. I forgot who the woman is. But it sounds rather interesting. It's an action comedy fantasy thriller.
Okay.
It's called Tis the Season to Get Even.
Love it.
So yes, I saw that thing last night, late, and I was like, because I wasn't sold. I actually watched Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. I hadn't seen it in years, and I decided to watch it the other day. And when I got done with it, I was like, oh my God, he's going to so be not thrilled that I, because I didn't know if you'd ever seen that or not.
It's been a long time, but okay. Yes.
It is as bad as you remember. Wow. I haven't watched it in so long, and that was hard to get through. So I'm glad I found this at the last moment.
Well, I'm looking forward to Fat Man and Christmas Chronicles 2 and Santa Claus is Coming to Town, the original Christmas classic.
You know what I'm looking forward to?
What?
December 12th.
What's happening then?
On December 12th. And we're not doing video this week. This is audio only, so you can't see that he's rolling his eyes at me. But the beautiful, lovely, talented Scottish goddess, Karen Gillan, and I are going to have a little 2-minute one-on-one chat on the computer thingy, and I am so looking forward to it. Yes, I get to talk to Amy Pond and all these other great things that she's done. So what's her name in Marvel?
Nova, something like that.
I don't think that's it, but anyway. So that's the big thing. So I'm very happy that I'm going to get to have a little chat with her, thanks to GalaxyCon.
That's right. I'm looking up that name because it's going to bother me now. Her name in that movie is Nebula.
I got it before yet. Yes. Yeah. But anyway, so I'm doing it more for the Amy Pond version, because I'm a Whovian. I'm a private Whovian. Although her doctor is not my favorite doctor.
You're not doing it for Jumanji?
I'm doing it for Jumanji, sure. That little outfit she's got on Jumanji is fantastic. And she's done some other great, she's written and directed some movies. And she's written and directed some little, she does little Hollywood horror shorts. She loves horror movies. And she has done, she's done some little shorts with her. And I believe some of them are with her friend. She's real good friends with Katie Sackhoff.
I did not know that. So what did she think of Oculus as a horror fan?
What did I think of it?
No, what did she think of Oculus?
Well, she got paid from it, so she probably thinks it's fine.
I still haven't seen it.
Watch it again. And I ran that by your brother, Devin, not Alex, the wayward child that we don't talk about as much. We actually went and saw that in the theater on opening day because Amy Pond was in it, and we were so thrilled. Yeah, we both left going, God, that thing sucked. We were so irritated. So I mentioned it to him not long ago. I was like, hey, I'm thinking about watching Oculus again because I think we missed something. And he just looked at me and said, you didn't miss a thing. It sucked. Like, all right. So but it has Katie Sackhoff too. So I'm assuming that's what they became friends.
Okay.
The only thing I'm disappointed in is she lives in L.A. now. I thought I was going to be getting a call from the Highlands.
Oh.
So that's what I'm going to. I'm going to do a movie pitch for her. I think they need to remake The Highlander with a woman, and she needs to play the Highlander.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well done, sir.
That's going to be my pitch to her, that she needs to do that. So, but that's all I got. Oh, and I am going to ask her to marry me. I just have to figure out how to get rid of the wife right now, which she knows. I told her, and she said, okay. If she says yes, I'll move out of the way.
Okay.
said it very confidently, by the way.
You said what?
She said it very confidently, so it wasn't going to be a problem.
Right, right. Mm-mm-mm.
That's all I got, homie.
That's all I got. Well, I'm looking forward to Fat Man and Christmas Chronicles 2, and Santa Claus is Coming to Town, a classic. So that'll be a fun week to highlight the man in the red suit, and then we got to figure out what we're doing next week for more Christmas stuff. So we'll figure it out, though.
We need some Ms. Christmas movies.
We'll figure something out. Well,
Santa's helper.
We can, you, if you want to put that as forward as your movie in the next week, by all means. Oh man. Well, we will see you all here on the next podcast named Tim. Of course, don't forget to subscribe. If you've listened all the way to this point, there ain't no other reason that you should be subscribing. You have no excuse at this point. And of course, subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. Goodbye, and we will see you next week.